locking mechanisms. There was nothing to suggest emergency security systems. But she found a small bank of glyphs relating to door locks on the closed bridge between the storage depot and the central block, that part of the tower from which its name had originally come. Briefly forcing her thoughts into the Tau language, Copley manipulated the controls, punching alien glyphs, unlocking every portal between here and the main block, before turning to her operators and signaling them to move through the room. Stealth systems still fully engaged, they passed her, joined up with Rice on the other side, and proceeded along the walkway. Copley came up last. Glancing down, she saw that their presence had not been noted. The Tau and their adopted human workers went about their business, oblivious to the killing that had just taken place. She hoped that would last long enough for them to gain the main control center. Compared to that, getting in this far had been a breeze. She knew it wouldn't last. The first kill had been made. Many more lives would end this day. Chapter 24. Kara stood in the shadowed mouth of a cave high in the cliff face, his helmet optics gently whirring, zooming in and out at his mental command as he scanned the outer perimeter of the Tau facility. It wouldn't be long till sunset. He hoped Copley and her team were as far along in their task as they were supposed to be. The Tau were a diurnal race. Just like humans, they had fought back the night, first with fire, then with electricity. With the need for the fire cast to operate effectively in the dark, night vision capabilities had followed, built into their helms and battle suits. And then they'd gone beyond that, fitting their drones with advanced multi-spectrum optics and energy sensors. Even now, as Kara studied the walls of the tower at range, that advanced Tau scanning technology would be sweeping the surrounding area, most likely in the form of surveillance and security drone patrols. At least, they didn't have psykers. Not among their own kind. Sigmar's data indicated no Nikassar or other Tau-aligned psychic races were present on Tychonis. One less thing to concern him. He had sent his spirit out, murmuring the mantra of sight beyond sight, searching, questing for signs of life, the glow of sentient souls. Tau didn't register strongly in the Immaterium. Comparing their aura to that of a human was like comparing a candle to a city on fire. Or a burning forest. Memories of his visions in the Eldar machine threatened to rise up and distract him. He snarled and slammed shut the doorway to that room in his mind. Down on the canyon floor and up on the far side, on the plateau above, he sensed the simple spirit energy of desert creatures. He sensed other things, too. Humans held within the tower's north block, and beings of other races as well, though these were very few. What bothered him was that the psychic signatures of those souls were much dimmer than they should have been. There was a strange fogginess to his astral sight. It couldn't be a Tau thing. They knew so little of the warp and the realm of the immaterial. As the speaker had mentioned, the prison blocks had old pentagramic warding. But this seemed to be something different. For a start, there was a different resonance to it, and it seemed particularly powerful at its center, a single location somewhere beneath the main tower. The place where Epsilon was rumored to be. Whatever it was, it kept his astral presence at bay, unable to proceed where he willed it to go. It was like trying to push two magnets together. He kept sliding off to the side. He soon stopped trying and withdrew his astral self into his physical body. The sun was beginning to set in the west, flooding the valley floor with warm liquid light, just before it dipped below the horizon. He turned his gaze to the walkways, high atop the perimeter walls of the tower. Visor optics zoomed at maximum magnification. In the day's last light, he saw Tau sharpshooters in their distinctive carapace armor walking back and forth in groups of three. Occasionally, they would stop on one of the towers to gaze out into the canyon before turning and walking back the way they had come. No appreciable signs of tension. Good. It looked like Archangel hadn't been detected. How far was she from her objective? She must be pretty close. He hadn't been able to detect her signature through clairvoyance, so she was within the perimeter beyond which his gift could not take him. That meant minutes only until those defenses went down, unless she and her team were killed or captured in the effort. "Everything is ready, Scholar," said a gruff voice from behind. Karras didn't need to turn. "No change on the walls yet, Omni? No sign? They haven't tripped any alarms, at least."
"I'm betting on Archangel and her team,"
Karras nodded. This kind of thing was her daily bread in SODF. She's better suited to this kind of thing than I suspect you or I will ever be. Voss drew up beside him and smiled.
"I'm starting to forget what a good stand-up fight feels like."
"Aye," thought Karras. "I doubt any of us thought Death Watch service would be like this. But the Watch and the Ordo operate as they must. It's a special kind of war they wage." "What's the mood back there?" he asked.
"Positive," said Voss. "Eager, even. Prophet is griping as usual, but I think he's secretly happy about the role Archangel gave him.
It's where he can do the most good.
If it keeps him out of the way of the rest of us, so much the better. Chiron is getting restless, though. The Elysians are giving him a wide berth.
It won't be long now."
"Can you truly not see into that place?"
Karras turned and looked down at his short, stocky brother. "Whatever is stopping me is strong. The closer we get to it, the less access I'll have to my gift." Voss paused. He seemed to be considering whether or not to say something out loud. "What troubles you, Omni?" asked Karras. "Speak freely."
"I was recalling Chiaro, Scholar. I remember looking back at you surrounded by gene stealers while the rest of us ran for the exfil point. What I saw you do that day, you obliterated them. Until then, I had thought us more or less the same. But not after that. You're something else entirely. I've wondered since why you need the rest of us at all."
Karras found himself both saddened and troubled by those words. He did not want to be different. Any barrier between him and the rest of the squad could only be a negative. Cohesion and trust were everything. "It was a desperate moment, brother. Had I any other choice? I cannot tell you the depth of the risk I take every time I have to depend on my gift to that degree. It is my very soul with which I might ultimately have to pay the cost one day. I'm sure the brothers of your own Librarius feel the same. Often do I wish I did not have access to this power at all. When I need it most is the very time it is most likely to destroy me." Voss nodded slowly.
"When I saw you rip those stealers apart in midair, I admit I envied you a little. I thought I could do so much more if I were gifted like you. But to hear you speak of the price you pay..."
They stood in silence a moment, each with their thoughts.
"Lend me your strength, Omni," said Karras. "With you and the others at my side, perhaps I will not need to risk my soul like that again." "You don't even have to ask it, Scholar. It's yours. In Dawn's name."
Fine words, and he meant them. But both Space Marines knew Karras would have to risk his soul again and again regardless. They were Death Watch, assigned to Sigmar. There would never be an easy op. "You should get back," said Karras. "The sign will come any moment. And when it does, I want Reaper flight in the air in seconds." Voss turned and moved off into the shadows of the tunnel at the back of the cave, leaving Karras alone again, looking out over the last changing colors of the dying day.
Soon, thought Karras, soon it'll be time to go in, whether Archangel is successful or not. Live up to your reputation, woman. Open the way.
Chapter 25. Progress was slower than Copley would have liked. The halls and walkways were frequently swept by security drones. The unit's auto-issued camo suits masked body heat, scent molecules, even the sounds of breathing and heartbeat. But none of that would have mattered without the patience and skill she and her men had honed over long years of special operations training and deployment. The Tau drones were all but silent until they got within about 8 meters. From there, the pulsing hum of their anti-gravitic motors could be heard. Copley and her people held their collective breaths every time one of the damned things drifted past. Twice they made cover just in the nick of time. Copley knew she was sweating, but the camo suit masked that too, locking the moisture away in a microweave layer. Half seconds counted when avoiding the drones. Any flicker of unexpected movement caught by their lenses would bring investigation. And it wasn't just drones. Sometimes a fire warrior would accompany them, routinely patrolling the corridors with the drones floating along behind. But the patrolling soldiers looked bored and listless. This was no task for a born warrior. Tau soldiers longed to be on the front line, fighting to expand their race's empire. Being stuck out here for years without conflict or intrusion had made them complacent by default. Try as a commander might, any commander, it made little difference. Long periods lacking stimulation or surprise dulled the edge of even the best blades. Copley was more anxious about the drones than any flesh-and-blood foes. Being spotted meant being fired on, and that would mean losing what razor-thin advantage they still currently held. Trip one alarm, alert a single enemy, and the whole base would go on lockdown. Copley and her team would be cornered and exterminated like rats. Most would have cracked and slipped up, but tension was like high-octane promethium to special forces operators. Pressure brought out Copley's best. The Ordo didn't hand out command to just anyone. With a series of last-second evasions and silent kills, she and her team finally reached the door to the central control chamber, with situational advantage still intact. No time to breathe easy, though. It was almost that time in which stealth would have to be abandoned. Almost, but not quite. The door was a large, solid-looking disc of advanced Tau super ceramics, set deep in a thick blast-proof wall. A seam ran down the middle where the door would split in two and retract into the frame on either side. There was no point trying to blow it or cut it, too strong. She'd assumed from the start that success would come down to hacking. There was no other way she was getting in there. She whispered to her team. The sound picked up by her throat mic and transmitted to their earpieces over the squad's encrypted, short-range voxnet.
"This is it. Morant, take a look at that panel and tell me what you think."
"If I can pry off that housing, ma'am, and get access, then the module could..."
Grigolitz cut in.
"If that thing is rigged with anti-temper alarms, man."
"What would you do?"
said Rice. Grigolitz pointed to the ceiling. Above them, the corridor was lined with pipes and cables, all threaded through solid ceramic support struts. Some of those lines carried power and data. Others, as thick as a man, pushed fresh air in and pulled stale air out. Nothing they could crawl through, but...
"We wait up there," said Grigolitz. "When one of the blue bastards goes in or comes out, we drop, kill him, and storm the room while the door is still open. Smoke or gas, lady's choice."
He looked at Copley.
"Me? I'm for smoking it and shooting them all, but if you'd rather put them to sleep, ma'am..."
Copley processed her thoughts for all of 3 seconds. The door access panel's casing might well have alarms attached. 50-50. Griggs' idea had better odds.
"We gas them," she ordered. "I might want some of them alive at some point. Any firecast, though, we kill outright. Clear?"
"Crystal, ma'am,"
said Triskel, standing on her left. He patted one of the nerve gas grenades on his webbing.
"I knew these babies would come in handy."
"Up," said Copley.
She leapt and grabbed one of the support struts above her, then hauled herself up and over the thickest bundle of pipes. The others, looking up, saw her disappear completely from view.
"Rice and Morant will make the kill together. One in front, one behind. No noise. Grig, you and Triskel drop with me and go in hard. Triskel covers the right. Grig, you're on my left. I'm taking center. The second we're in the room, throw. A good spread. By the look of these outer walls, we're probably talking about a large split-level chamber. We've seen how the Tau like to configure their control rooms. Security will be the upper control banks. General operations will be the lower."
"And the door?" asked Triskel.
"Morant, I want you on that before the gas clears. The second you and Rice are done with the kill, I want the body dragged in and the door locked up tight again. Use the module if you need to. Work fast. Once we're all in, I want absolute control. Let's make it so they'll have to cut the door to get to us."
As they listened to her, the four men hauled themselves up over the pipes and cables until they were perched there, hidden from the view of any that might pass below. Then they waited. Body weight spread out as much as possible, looking down through gaps in the cabling, ears attuned for the first sound of footsteps or disengaging locks. Copley thought of Talon Squad and the rest of her men waiting for the signal she had promised. Time was getting on. Every one of them knew just how much depended on her taking down the anti-air systems here. The whole operation was so damned tenuous. A single mistake and they'd all be flying to their deaths. And after that, the Tau would know. They'd know that the Ordo had located Epsilon. They'd know that Tychonis had been put on the Imperial map again. And they'd start locking the planet up. They might even move Epsilon off-world, depending on her value to them, on how much she was giving them.
"Just stay switched on," she told herself. "Stay focused."
There was a click and hiss from below. The ceramic circle split in two. Yellow-white light spilled into the corridor. A shadow appeared, cast on the corridor floor by light from the control center. A second later, the short, stocky Earthcast tech to whom it belonged emerged, moving briskly. Rice and Morant didn't need to be told. They dropped with barely a sound, one in front of the Tau engineer, the other behind. The alien's eyes went wide for the briefest instant. Its mouth began to open, ready to cry out in alarm. Too late. From the Xenos's rear, Rice's arm snaked around to the front. He clamped his hand over the blue skin's mouth. At the same moment, Triskel thrust his blade up and under the alien's ribcage, cleaving the heart as Triskel yanked hard, upwards and backwards, on the handle of his blade. The Tau shuddered in Rice's grip and went slack. Together, the two operators lowered the body to the floor. Barely 3 seconds. They hadn't bent even halfway before Copley and the other two dropped and bolted through the open control center door.
"Gas!"
Copley barked. At her voice, the aliens inside turned from their consoles. Too late. Three small cylindrical canisters rolled into the room, each coming to a stop a good 4 meters away from the others. Even before they stopped rolling, clouds of thick yellowish vapor began to hiss and billow out. Copley watched along the barrel of her lasgun as shocked Tau began clutching at their throats. One after another, in rapid succession, they started dropping to the floor. Behind her, Triskel and Rice had already dragged the Earthcast tech's body inside. With the gas thickening, obscuring her view, Copley switched her goggles to infrared and ran to the upper level. There she found the prone forms of several fire warriors. She put a single lethal round through each of their skulls. From down below, she heard the door hiss shut and the locking bolts engage.
"That's us locked up nice and tight, ma'am," Morant said, unless they built in a bypass code. I'll need time to find it.
Get to it, she said.
Get to it, she said. Triskel, Rice, hogtie the blueskins down there and gather them in the middle of the room. Triss, you'll keep them covered in case they wake up.
Yes, ma'am.
Grig, get up here with me. Morant, you too, once you've finished with the door. We'll need the module up here if the control systems are all encrypted. Rice, you'll stay down there with Triss. Stay by the door. You hear any movement outside it, I want to know about it.
Aye, ma'am.
Orders given, Copley went straight to a central console and started working her way out from there, checking the main function of each. The control system for the installation's defences had to be here. It had to be on one of these panels. The gas had cleared now, pulled out by the room's extractors. She switched back to standard optics. It took around 3 full minutes for her to find the Tau cogitator station she was looking for. She allowed herself a moment, a brief bursting moment of relief. Then she started tapping on the glowing holographic glyphs of the station's rune board. Menu after menu flashed up. She didn't have time to read them all. She was looking for one particular string of glyphs. Just as she was starting to think she'd never find it, there it was.
Got you!
Finally, after all the sneaking around, all the tension of trying to get here undetected, she had it. She tapped her way carefully through a series of prompts. Red glyphs flashed in front of her, asking for confirmation. Did she really want to power down the auto-defense systems? She jabbed her finger on a small square of projected light. Immediately, other monitors around her started displaying power level data as energy was cut off from the weapon emplacements on the walls and rooftops. More typing, and Copley had control of the locks on the facility's main gates and security doors. A failsafe query shimmered in the air before her. One more glyph to press. Her finger stabbed hololithic light. Outside, set in the facility's thick walls, locking mechanisms disengaged. From another console, Grigalitz called out to her.
That's done it, ma'am. Lots of activity out there.
It was inevitable. She'd known that the very moment she powered down the defences and unlocked the gates, the Viper's Nest would rouse.
Well done, gentlemen, she told her four-man squad. This facility is now open to visitors.
The Death Watch would be watching from afar. They'd have seen the defences power down. Reaper flight would be inbound within minutes. Copley and her people had to keep control of the room until the birds were on sight. Those anti-air batteries had to stay dead. Already, Tau forces would be racing towards the control room. She couldn't let them retake it. She and her men had to dig in hard.
Don't be too long, Death Watch, she muttered,
as she turned from the console to oversee the defense of the control center. 3 kilometers away, from the mouth of the High Cave, Karras watched by the light of the planet's 2 bluish-silver moons as the glow of targeting displays and status panels on the Tau defense turrets suddenly started winking off, one after another. Awareness of the sudden shutdown spread from tower to tower, the fire-cast soldiers becoming abruptly active, though not frantic. There was no obvious sign of an assaulting enemy, after all. It must be a technical issue. Then a Fireblade squad leader, broader and more muscular than the rest, burst out of a tower door and began barking and gesturing at the others. The Tau snapped into action, racing to the edge of the walls, raising the blueskin equivalent of magnoculars to their eyes to scan the canyon.
She's done it, Karras rasped on the task force channel.
Arcturus, lock and load. The turrets are down. We're going in.
About bloody time, Zeed replied.
Barely 2 minutes later, 3 heavily modified and unmarked black storm ravens screamed in along the canyon floor, kicking up great clouds of dust as they tore towards the objective, their metal bellies filled with Ordo Xenos stormtroopers and Death Watch space marines. No more hiding, no more waiting. Time to kick down some doors.
Chapter 26.
canyon walls, blackened by the new night, whipped past Karras as he leaned out of the starboard side hatch of Reaper 1. Up ahead, the walls and towers of Al-El-A-Tarag stretched towards a sky now pricked with bright stars. Reaper flight was closing on those walls fast. Archangel and her team had secured the Storm Ravens their approach window. Karras hoped she was still alive. Heavily armed response teams would be converging on her position in the control center by now. With the Storm Ravens roaring into visual range of the Tau on the high walls, a dense barrage of pulse rifle and burst cannon fire began blazing out, lighting up the night. Little threat at this range, but things would get nastier in a few seconds. The Tau would be scrambling to get heavier man-portable weapons out on the walls, in lieu of their disabled batteries. The Storm Ravens were too high and too fast to worry about the current barrage, but they'd have to hover in an aerial kill zone just long enough to make their individual drops. They'd be highly vulnerable when stationary. Before that, the Tau had to be taught to keep their heads pulled in. Fire warriors were streaming from their barracks into the installation's central courtyard, their armor lit in sharp relief by the muzzle flashes of their companions already firing up at their uninvited guests. A missile from Reaper 3 streaked past Karras, so close he almost felt the wash of heat from it. He watched it arc in towards one of the deactivated defense emplacements, this one bristling with Tau Seeker missiles. It struck dead center. Seeker warheads detonated in a rippling series of secondary explosions that tore the entire top of the tower to pieces. Rubble rained down on those below. Fire warriors scrambled out of the way. Fireblade leaders yelled at them to stand firm, to keep firing. A dozen or so were crushed. Others had bones shattered. They collapsed to the ground in agony. Their comrades pulled them into cover, calling out for Earth-cast medical techs. So much fire was pouring into the air now, as more and more infantry filled the open spaces below, that it seemed the Storm Ravens were flying into a blizzard. Pulse rounds hit Reaper 1's wing, just in front of Karras, smacking it to the underside, and leaving little black burn marks. But although those inside could feel the impacts, the assault craft shrugged them off, utterly undaunted, and swung around, leveling its nose-mounted twin-linked heavy bolters at a cluster of fire warriors on the roof of the north cell block. A familiar deep drumming sounded over the muffled rumble of stealthed jet engines. Explosive bolts poured down at the Tau, punching through armor and ripping into blue-gray flesh beneath. Tau blood sprayed dark patterns on moonlit rockcrete as dozens were gunned down. In seconds, the roof was cleared of all but smoking corpses. "North landing zone clear. Moving in for the drop," reported Ventius from the cockpit. "Watcher, you're up," barked Karras.
"I should be storming the main block with you," growled Routh.
It was the second time he had protested the splitting up of the kill team for the assault. It was the second time Karras denied him.
"No, you will secure the north block, brother. We can't be sure Epsilon is in the sublevels. I need you to take this block and hold it. If she is here, it will be on you to get her to one of the Storm Ravens. Do not fail me."
"Witchblood," said Routh. "I never fail."
After unleashing a suppressing torrent of lethal fire at Tau on the nearest wall walk, Reaper 1 dipped into position, as low as possible. Routh kicked out a zipline, ordered his fire team of 5 stormtroopers to line up ready for the drop, then stepped out into open space. The stormtroopers clipped themselves to the zipline and dropped after him, each a study in cool efficiency, not speaking, no hesitation, resp-masked faces unreadable. Having watched the last of them drop from across the hold, Karras turned and looked down from his side hatch at the rooftop below. He watched as Routh stormed towards the stairway access door, the stormtroopers chasing hard to close ranks on him. At a run, they descended into the section of the prison reserved for human inmates. Karras tested his witch sight, trying to send his astral vision down into the block. He could dimly sense human souls there, but the barrier to his power, whatever it was, resisted his attempts to project his awareness out of his body. Here, this close to its source, he was locked inside himself. A fresh fusillade of glowing plasma and pulse rounds stabbed through the air in Reaper One's direction. Rounds struck the thick plate of the closed assault ramp at the front of the craft. The Storm Raven shuddered. Ventius's voice was tense.
"Taking heavy fire from the walls, Talon Alpha. Need to move."
"Clear the central block rooftop and get me in," replied Karras. "Missiles at your discretion."
"There may be structural damage. Risk of collapsing the only access."
"Take it. Archangel is in there. If she's still alive, she's going to need support fast. The longer she holds the main control center, the better our chances. Get me in."
"My lord."
The gunship's nose swung 20 degrees right, giving Karras a view down into the busy courtyard where firecast officers and sergeants were trying to marshal their troops. Some were directing fire up towards Reaper One. Glowing rounds whipped past Karras as he watched. Other firecarders were running for Vaters to take them up to the wall walks, hoping to pour additional fire on the assaulting aircraft from there. Earthcast techs were working frantically at the disabled turrets, trying to bring them back online. Karras cursed. The Tau engineers might find a way to override Copley's hack. If those anti-air batteries came back online, no one was getting out of here alive, not by air. There was a great roar to his left. He watched Reaper 3 swing in from about 200 meters away, angling its nose at the upper levels of the south cell block. Front-mounted heavy bolters blazed. The muzzle flash lit the whole roof. The Tau forces there were chewed apart, turned to dark smears and shattered plate. Some were hit close to the roof's edge. They tumbled backwards, out into the air, their bodies plummeting to the ground below. A massacre. The Storm Ravens were shadows of death in the night, cutting down Xenos like wheat before scythes. Suddenly, blinding streams of blue light lanced up towards Reaper 3, missing by what must have been centimeters. Karras tracked the trajectory back to its source and saw two crisis battlesuits, XV-8s, stalking out of the armory doors on the southwest side of the base, their massive rail rifles aimed at the sky. Their strange gait, both machine-like and alien at the same time, immediately brought back memories from the sensorium feeds at Damaroth and the vid-picts he had studied on the Saint Navarre. Highly mobile, and with serious hardware, he had seen how deadly the blue-skinned battlesuits could be.
"Reaper 3!" Karras foxed over to the other aircraft. "Make your drop and pull back. You're drawing heavy fire. Two XV-8s down below."
"I see them, Talon Alpha."
As the pilot swung his craft over the lip of the south block, the battlesuits fired upwards again, this time striking the corner of the building. Reaper 3 had shifted out of their line of sight just in time. Where the hyper-accelerated round struck the prison block walls, they erased the reinforced rockcrete completely. The XV-8s were the biggest threat to the Storm Ravens. For missiles, there were countermeasures. For railguns, there were none. Karras put out a call over the Vox, alerting all task force elements to the threat. Muzzle flashes from up ahead caught his eye. A fresh storm of rounds started arcing towards him from the roof of the central building. More Tau squads were streaming out to reinforce their comrades.
"Reaper One, why are there still hostiles on that rooftop?" Karras demanded. "Clear those Xenos out and get me down there!"
Reaper One angled left, dipped its nose, and surged forward, bolters blazing.
"Spear Two,"
voxed Ventius, announcing missile launch. From the wing-mounted pods on either side of the Storm Raven, a single lethal dart dropped. Rocket fuel ignited. The missiles leapt forward, streaking through the night. Everything flared white and yellow as payloads detonated on contact. From his place at the hatch, Karras saw Tau bodies cartwheeling off into the dark, falling to the courtyard, their combat fatigues ablaze. A few were left alive on the rooftop, stunned and deafened. They staggered blindly, disoriented by the explosions. Karras took aim and added his own fire to that of the nose-mounted bolters. He picked them off with ease. Heads snapped backwards. Rounds detonated within alien skulls, blowing them apart. The pilot gunned the engines, and the Stormraven surged forward. Reaper 1 tilted in over the roof of the central block and settled into a dangerous but necessary hover. There she hung, roaring and restless, impatient to be off again and laying slaughter on the foe. Small arms fire smacked her sides from atop the nearest wall, but at least here, in the center of the roof, she was beyond the line of sight of the ground-based forces and the two XV-8s.
"In position, Alpha!"
At Karras's feet, a coil of zipline was already fixed to the floor lug. He wouldn't need it, but those following him would. He kicked it out of the side hatch. On the other side of the Stormraven, one of Karras's Elysian assault team members kicked out another zipline. At the rear hatch, another Arcturus trooper dropped a third. Now three ziplines extended down from the hovering gunship. Two operators clipped themselves onto each of those lines. The remaining two would follow them down, and one more operator would precede Karras on his side. The Space Marine would drop last. Karras moved back from the hatch and gestured to the waiting Elysian. The man nodded and moved into place, clipping himself smoothly to the line. Karras barked the go order over the fireteam vox channel, as one the first three troopers plunged from their respective hatches. Leaning out again, the Death Spectre watched all three hit rock crete within milliseconds of each other. He saw them move out from the ziplines, drop to a knee, lasguns to shoulders, and secure the drop zone for those that would follow. An instant later, two more sets of boots hit the roof. Those troopers quickly moved into covering positions too. Karras ignored the zipline. He didn't need it at this height. He stepped out from the hatch and dropped like a 300-kilogram bomb. He hit the roof heavily, right in the center of the five-man team, ceramite boots fracturing the surface, power armor shock absorbers soaking up the impact. He began moving at once, bolter raised, muzzle trained on the open stairway access to which he was running.
"On me!"
Behind him, the stormtroopers broke into a run. They had covered half the distance when a squad of Tau with pulse carbines burst from the doorway at the top of the stairs. Whatever they expected, it wasn't a massive Space Marine in black thundering towards them. That tiny instant of recognition and shock was all they got. With tight, controlled bursts, Karras put bolter rounds into each of them. Two shots, center mass. The stormtroopers with him didn't even have time to fire. As the bolter rounds exploded inside each alien chest, the Tau were knocked from their feet, some thrown backwards onto Rockcrete, others tumbling back down the stair. Without breaking step, Karras kept on, ready to pour fire down on any Xenos still foolish enough to try to ascend. He and the stormtroopers stacked up at the top of the stair, in partial cover of the doorway, and leaned in, weapons ready, eyes alert for any sign of movement. Nothing. Just bodies broken and tangled. The walls around them splashed with blue blood. Karras descended. His unit followed. They were in the main block now. He just had to establish Voxnet contact with Copley and find out where the hell Epsilon was and how to get there. At the bottom of the stairs, he found himself in a corridor lit by orange looms. The ceiling was low enough that Karras could have reached up and punched a hole in it.
"Archangel, this is Scholar," he said over the tactical command channel. "Respond."
Static.
"Archangel, this is Scholar. Respond."
Nothing. Assuming she was still alive, something was wrong with comms. Could the Tau be jamming the Vox somehow?
"My lord,"
asked one of the troopers.
"We push on," said Karras, "and try to pick up a signal as we go deeper."
Again he cursed the strange barrier here that was stoppering his abilities. What the hell was it? He was certain now that it wasn't just some type of old anti-psycho ward. It seemed somehow familiar, but
right now. All he could do was push on, and hope to disable it at the source somehow. The Tau would have noted the rooftop drops. Reaper flight would continue to harry the forces amassed outside, but fire carders would be pouring into each block, sweeping floor after floor from ground level up, intending to cut the invaders off as they descended from the roofs. Barricades would be thrown up at key exits. Escape routes were likely being cut off even now. The Tau would try to funnel the assaulting elements into killing zones. How far would they go to prevent Arcturus from securing Epsilon? What was her value to them? He switched Vox channel. Talon Squad, this is Talon Alpha. Respond! Nothing. He switched channel again as he and his team pressed on. Reaper One, this is Talon Alpha. Respond! Again, nothing. No link to the outside at all now. Despite rotating frequencies and high-level auto-encryption, both standard for Ordo Special Operations, it seemed the Tau had found a way to jam Imperial comms, at least from within the central building. No access to his talents, and now no analog comms. This keeps getting better and better. He had to get to Archangel fast. If she still held the facility's command center, there might be something she could do. Because without any ability to coordinate the assault, this op was a lost cause. Chapter 27 Salarian squeezed the trigger. His rifle kicked. One moment the Fireblade leader was standing on the wall, yelling and barking like a mad dog, frantically trying to coordinate his squad's fire on the Stormraven overhead. The next moment, he had no mouth to yell with. The round obliterated his lower jaw, and then punched through the back of his neck with such force that it tore the skull free. The body dropped to its knees, then pitched forward, landing awkwardly, limbs at angles, hands still gripping his carbine. The fire warriors on either side of their slain leader roared in grief and rage, and redoubled their efforts to shoot down the gunship. Two of the Xenos brought forward rail rifles, easily spotted by their long barrels. Pulse carbines and pulse rifles couldn't do much against the Storm Ravens, but if a rail round struck an engine or a fuel line...
"Brace for missile evasion," shouted the pilot over the vox.
Salarian grabbed a grip rail on the inner rim of his hatch. The Storm Raven pitched left violently. Had the Ultramarine been a second too late to grab on, he'd have rolled straight out the far side. The missile screamed by him, missing the Storm Raven by a scant 3 meters. The pilot, angered by the close call, dipped the craft's nose and unleashed the fury of its heavy bolters. Rounds stitched the courtyard, cutting down a dozen Tau infantry. But the crisis battlesuit that had fired the missile was already on the move, leaping to cover on bursts of blue flame from its back-mounted jump jets. As the Storm Raven leveled out, Salarian sighted down his scope, zeroed in on one of the Tau with the rail rifles, and squeezed off another perfect shot. The round took the target in the chest, hitting like a meteor. Without halting to take satisfaction, Salarian aimed at the other rail rifle wielder. He was about to make the kill, when Reaper 2 lurched high into the air.
"Brace!" shouted the pilot. "Missile locked onto us!"
"Damn it!" cursed the Ultramarine.
"Launching countermeasures!"
There was a great, blinding burst of flares and irradiated chaff. The missile swerved away from the Storm Raven, giving its occupants a moment of relief.
"Bring us around on that bastard!" raged Salarian. "Get me an angle. We have to stop those XV-8s. "They've split up, my lord," replied the pilot. "We're taking fire from direct front and far right. We have to keep moving."
"Then move, but get me a line on one of them so I can make the damned shot before they take us out."
Zed made ready to drop from Reaper 3 onto the roof of the south block with 5 of Copley's killers. At this point,
Chiron was still attached by Magna Grapple to the back of the Storm Raven, so the Raven Guard and his stormtroopers were forced to drop from side hatches only. Before Zeed leapt, he turned and looked at Voss, who with Chiron and his own fire team would drop into the courtyard to assault the armory.
"No rounding up, Paperface," said Voss with a grin. "Confirmed kills only."
Zeed grinned back. "You're the one who needs to round up. By my count, you've lost the last three." They gripped wrists.
"This one's mine," said Voss. "But don't go embarrassing yourself. Give me a challenge at least."
The Raven Guard chuckled.
"In your dreams, tree stump."
It was as close as the two friends ever got to telling each other, "Don't die out there." They were Adeptus Astartes. They didn't die easily. But against these odds. Zeed and his team dropped from the hatches. They hit the rooftop hard and fast, their formation flawless. As Reaper 3 swung around, Voss watched his friend and the Elysians make for the stairwell down into the south cell block where the Tau prisoners were held. Voss pitied the Elysians deploying with the Raven Guard. If they slowed him down for any more than an instant, he'd likely leave them behind. In pursuit of a decent fight, he was likely to go off mission anyway. Nothing to be done. He had his own team to think of. He turned his attention to the central courtyard. Tau fire warriors, having witnessed the rooftop drops, were streaming into the main buildings now, aware that the fight had moved inside.
"Where Epsilon is sure to be," he thought.
Voss and Chiron weren't part of that search, but if they failed in their objectives, no one would be flying out of here. Over the Vox, the Imperial Fist addressed the massive Lamenter.
"Ready to unleash some rage, old one?"
"Get me on the ground, brother, and you will see."
Voss smiled and voxed the pilot.
"Clear some space and get us down, as near to that armory as you can."
He, his fireteam, and Chiron would be facing the most resistance, drawing the heaviest and most prolonged fire. For those inside the prison blocks and central tower, the fighting would be corridor by corridor, bloody and close, just the way the kill team had so rigorously trained in the kill blocks back on Damaroth. For the Imperial Fist, the Lamenter, and those with them, things would be more chaotic. That armory had to be breached, and any vehicles within either crippled or destroyed. That meant a drop under heavy fire on open ground. And once the armory was dealt with, the distinct possibility of getting pinned down inside. Chiron was supposed to be the solution for that. Voss was counting on him to keep the bulk of the Tau forces at bay, until he and his team could rejoin him outside and push the Xenos back. The moment Reaper 3 swung out over the edge of the prison block and back into view of the ground forces, wave after wave of bright rounds blazed up at it. The Storm Raven strafed the ground in response, bolters blazing, cutting down entire squads. Then something screamed past the cockpit, too close for comfort.
"Missiles!"
warned the pilot. Voss barked over the Voxlink.
"Prophet! You're supposed to be taking out anti-air threats. We almost got hit."
"I haven't missed a kill yet," snapped Solarian. "But there are two XV-8s down there, and I can only get an angle on one of them. If you can't stand the heat..."
Voss ignored that and addressed the pilot.
"Put a missile on the cluster nearest the hangar. Light them up, then drop us in, right on top of the bodies. Is that clear? I want Chiron free the moment we have that ground."
"They can still get a lock, my lord. It's too dangerous while..."
"We're not here to play safe," growled Voss. "We're here to get a job done. Now light them up and get us down."
"Aye, my lord." The craft dipped violently. "Spear two! Spear two!"
Twin trails of fire and smoke lanced from under the Storm Raven's wings. The two missiles screamed towards a cluster of Tau warriors defending the armory from hastily deployed barricades. They struck close together. The ground erupted, Fire blossomed into the air. Body parts rained down. The barricades were blasted apart. The ground beneath was blackened in a great ring. Reaper 3 arrested its drop and swung in, taking multiple hits on the hull from enemies on either side. Engines roaring, the Storm Raven settled hastily into position, the pilot pulling back on his yoke and hauling the craft's nose up. It stopped, hovering for just a moment about 3 meters above the ground. Blinding tau fire stitched the craft, but the armor held. Still, at this volume of fire and at this range, the risk to the engines and fuel tanks was too much to bear for long. Disengaging magna grapples! Chiron dropped from the back of the Storm Raven and hit the ground with a shudder. His piston legs hissed as they took the force of the impact. He swung his armored chassis around, surveying the enemy ranks before him, even as they turned their weapons on him. His assault cannon cycled up with a whine. A deep, booming stutter erupted from it. Tracer rounds stitched the enemy in a broad arc. Armor shattered. Blue blood sprayed. The weapon's overwhelming noise drowned out the screams of dying blueskins. The Lamenter stomped forward, swinging and firing in sweeps, slaying fire warriors to left and right, ignoring the rounds that smacked into his thick plate. He was utterly intent on clearing the area for Voss and the Elysians to drop in behind him.
"I have the landing zone, Omni," he boomed. "Drop and do some work."
Voss didn't need to be told. He'd seen everything from the starboard side hatch. At a gesture, his stormtroopers stepped out from the hold and into open air, dropping on their zip lines. When they had formed a cordon, weapons facing out, already blazing, Voss dropped right in the center. Between Chiron's blizzard of fire and the hail from the heavy bolters of Reaper 3, the Tau found themselves heavily suppressed. It was enough to allow Voss's team the drop they needed. No fatalities, no wounds. Now they were down, however. Tau rounds began whipping in their direction. Voss ignored them, even as several smacked into his right pauldron, and led his people at a run towards the armory. The rolling metal doors were gradually lifting. The Tau were bringing out armor to meet the Imperial assault. He had to get this done now. No mistakes.
"Tell me you've got this, Lamenter. Tell me you can hold."
"I have it," roared the Dreadnought. "Be about your business."
Voss sprinted, his kill team right behind him, running full tilt to keep up. Voss had deployed with a melter gun, the better to deal with enemy armor. As heavy as it was, it didn't slow him. Still, the armory doors were already at head height when he reached them. He ducked under, barely slowing his pace, and barreled inside. Before him was a broad hangar, the air within humming noisily with anti-gravitic engines and the powering up of deadly energy weapons. The Tau were bringing out their big guns to take down the Storm Ravens. Voss had to make sure they never got that chance. Fire whipped down at him and his team from gantries and metal stairwells.
"Drop them!"
he barked. Hotshot las fire cracked the air. Alien bodies fell limp, their flesh cratered and burned. But the enemy vehicles were powered up now. They began to turn towards him, eager to bring their weapons to bear. He raced straight for the nearest.
"Melter charges! Get your backsides in gear!"
The turret of the TX-7 hammerhead at which he was running almost had a bead on him. But Voss threw himself forward onto his back, skidding under it on a trail of sparks, and fired a blast from his melter gun straight up into its smooth metal underbelly. The massive tank trembled. A gaping hole appeared in its armor, edges glowing white-hot. Voss rolled out fast. Underneath the dying tank was not a good place to be. Just as he got clear, there was a dull crump from inside, a secondary explosion. The gravitic motors suddenly failed. The hammerhead hit rockcrete. A second later, pieces of its curved hull exploded outwards, filling the air with hot fragments. Under fire from the drones attached to the other tanks, Voss saw his Elysians run in at their own targets. They moved fast. One of them, Eric, slapped a melter charge on the radiator of a devilfish transport and angled away, springing hard.
When the charge blew, the pilot of the craft lost control. The hovering tank swung left and crashed straight into the side of another. More charges detonated. Both vehicles exploded into burning scrap.
"Covering fire!"
shouted Voss, pushing himself up and off towards the last target, another hammerhead. His melter already charged to fire again. All around him was smoke, flame, and the chaos of battle. He was smiling under his helm.
Right in the middle of the maelstrom.
Nothing else even came close. Chapter 28. The missile screamed so close to Chiron it almost grazed him. He was turning to cut down a Tau squad trying to flank him. A second earlier, or later in the turn, and the missile would have clipped him, detonated, bitten through his thick shell, possibly knocked him from his feet. Out in the open, besieged from several sides, that could mean death, and not one he could feel proud of. It was no easy thing for a dreadnought to right himself. The thought of dying that way filled him with sudden fury. He roared with rage as he strafed a fire carder of six, cutting them to pieces, then turned his attention to the source of the missile. The XV-8s were fast. For all their size, they were able to jump like fleas. Space Marines with an assault squad loadout might keep up. But all the dreadnought could hope to do was soak up the punishment until a good kill angle opened. Chiron saw moonlight and muzzle fire gleaming momentarily on his attacker's carapace before it vanished behind the corner of a barracks building. His hail of bullets was half a second too late. Rounds punched holes in the wall, chewing the corner to pieces, but the XV-8 had already repositioned. And there was still the other to watch for. Chiron knew he was in trouble. He couldn't see either, had no idea where they were now. They were so damned nimble. And he was the biggest target, the only target, on the ground right now. Both XV-8s were working together to get a kill angle on him while the Tau infantry kept him pressed. One would draw him, the other would flank and slay.
"Except I know what you're about, you Xenos curs. It will be harder than you think."
Where was that bloody Imperial fist? Why hadn't he exited that armory yet? The longer Chiron had to hold the courtyard alone, the greater the chance of failure.
"If you're in there much longer, son of Dawn," raged the Lamenter over the vox.
As if in answer, the stocky Death Watch operator barreled out of the armory door with his squad of Elysians in tow. One was missing, his ruined body cooling in the armory, cut down by pulse cannon fire from the gun drones of the last hammerhead tank before Voss had blown it to scrap. The four remaining stormtroopers immediately added their lasgun fire to Chiron's fusillade as they ran. Behind them, explosions rippled through the building. Great sections of the metal roof began to fall inwards. Thick smoke billowed out.
"Feeling the heat, Lamenter?"
voxed Voss, as he slid to a stop by Chiron's side, slung his melter gun, ripped his bolt pistol from the maglock on his left cuiss, and started taking down a squad of Tau infantry that were trying to pin them from portable barricades on the south side.
"More hardware in there than we anticipated, but we handled it."
"It won't matter if we can't take out their damned battle suits,"
Chiron said over the roar of his assault cannon.
"They're working on a suppress and flank."
"We still have sniper support," said Voss.
He voxed Solarian.
"Prophet, what's the word on those XV-8s?
The Ultramarine sounded hard-pressed.
"I've got other problems right now. They've deployed man-portable missile launchers on the walls. A lot of them. Multiple locks. All three Storm Ravens are running dangerously low on countermeasures. Scholar needs to get that damned woman out now, so we can leave this hellhole."
"If we don't secure the exterior,"
said Chiron,
"it won't matter."
"Listen, Prophet, as pressed as you are, We need you to take down one of the XV-8s. We can't get both from down here. They're too maneuverable. We need air support.
Damn it, Omni, I just told you.
I thought you were the best,
bit back the Imperial Fist.
Those XV-8s are honor kills. Biggest threat on the field. But if one of them is beyond you...
Voss knew he had him. It was too easy. Solarian went quiet. Then,
I am the best, you stunted oaf. Just watch for the kill shot, and mark it well.
Get us up, Solarian barked at the pilot. I need a clean angle on one of the battle suits.
My lord, the second I take us out of cover, we'll have every launcher on those walls locked right on us.
How many more times can we deploy countermeasures?
6. They get a good lock after that, and we're going down. I can evade 1, maybe 2, manually, but more than that.
Solarian switched to the tactical channel for all air support.
This is Talon 3. Listen up. I want maximum fire on wall walks, towers, and rooftops. Ignore ground targets until further orders. Is that clear?
My lord, voxed Ventius, Reaper 1.
That leaves Talons 4 and 6 without close support. They're under heavy fire down there.
They're the reason I'm ordering this, damn it. We need to clear the heights so I can take down one of those XV-8s. If I can't do that, our ground team won't hold.
Don't make me repeat myself. Turn all your attention to the walls, towers, and rooftops. Clear them, whatever it takes.
Orders given, he turned his attention back to the pilot of Reaper 2.
Gracker, you heard me. Get to it. Or Talon will be down 2 space marines, and the Death Spectre will take your head.
Chapter 29. Karras found the door to the command center. The Tau were trying to cut through it with a powerful laser. Fortunately, the quality of their own construction was working against them.